Mr. Chairman,
are we set? Yeah. Okay, welcome. Good morning, everyone, and I'd like to call the meeting to order. Would the clerk call the roll?
Commissioner Blank?
Here.
Commissioner Clark?
Present.
Commissioner Waso?
Here.
Commissioner Secor?
Present.
Commissioner Borgart? Commissioner Neely?
Here.
Commissioner Potter?
Yeah.
Commissioner Riley?
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
Here.
Commissioner Wan?
Here.
Chairman Kruer?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll go to staff to cover any new changes to the agenda and any procedures for today's hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There actually are no changes to the agenda. I would take the opportunity to announce to people that if they wish to speak to the commission, they should pick up a speaker slip on the table outside the doorway and fill that out and hand it to staff so that the chairman will know that you're wanting to speak on an item. The table also contains addendums for today's agenda items as well as some of the original staff reports. And finally, I'd just like to remind people to please turn off your cell phones during the meeting today. And the first item up is the administrative permit application from the Department of Fish and Game, which is a project to undertake a pilot wildlife management study at five discrete locations on state-acquired lots within the undeveloped Pacific Shore subdivision near Lake Earl. The wildlife management study involves testing various forms of mowing, goat grazing, trimming of vegetation, and burning to test the best way to beat back brush and grass to allow for certain species of plants that are crucial for the success of the Oregon silver spot butterfly to thrive, the plants being the blue viola and violet. The project will take place in the winter to avoid disturbance to the butterflies and while the targeted plants are dormant. The executive director approved the permit on February 15th, and the commission's regulations provide that unless four or more commissioners vote to remove the item from the administrative calendar, the permit will become effective. If four or more commissioners do vote to remove it, then the approval will be revoked and the application would be scheduled for a full public hearing. I need to indicate that there is opposition to this administrative application, and so I'd like to take a moment to just respond to some of the concerns. The permit was approved on the basis that as a management tool to further the endangered species, it is a resource-dependent use that would be appropriate in an ESHA. And the permit was conditioned with a variety of conditions to limit the goat grazing activities in particular, requiring that they be actively managed to ensure the goats stay where they're supposed to, that they don't get into other wetland areas, that they avoid overcropping the vegetation. There's also provisions dealing with the fueling and maintenance of vehicles and preventing the lopped or cut green waste from being dispersed over the site. And so the executive director determined that it was consistent with the ESHA protection policies of the Coastal Act. The permits opposed by the Environmental Protection Information Center, a letter from Wendell Wood of EPIC protesting issuance of the permit can be found in the green addendum that was included in the packet of materials that we distributed last night at the hotel, and there may be a few on the table there now. Mr. Wood raises concerns about other grass and brush management activities that have been undertaken by Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife Service elsewhere within the Del Norte coastal zone. Mr. Wood alleges that the project addressed by the administrative permit is related to those, and since those are not part of this project and do not otherwise have coastal development permits, that the administrative permit should not be issued. After we received the letter, we consulted with Fish and Game and were assured that the project covered by the administrative permit is not functionally dependent on whatever other activities are occurring. Whether or not those other grazing activities require a permit, this particular project is at a different site. It uses a different staging area. The contract with the goat herder is different from whatever might be used for the other locations. And so we don't see the functional relationship that requires that this be considered together with any other activities that are going on. We also note that the standard of review for the administrative permit is consistency with the Coastal Act. Whether or not the applicants are involved in other activities that need authorization does not affect whether this project is consistent with Coastal Act requirements. And we will examine the question of when grazing activities performed for resource management purposes on these other lands constitutes development that requires a permit. In this case, we felt a permit was needed and Fish and Game applied for it because it was for the first time introducing management activities on vacant residential lots that had never been developed. It's not clear that the other activities that are described in the letter are occurring on lands that haven't previously been managed or grazed, and thus whether the activities constitute a change of use. We realize that implicit in the comments is an underlying concern about whether goat grazing in general is harmful to the environment and is really an appropriate wildlife management purpose. And this general topic is a source of considerable controversy throughout the Western Wildlands. And we are considering scheduling a workshop during the September meeting in Eureka where we could explore the benefits and detriments of grazing as a tool for wildlife management purpose on coastal zone lands. And we would hope that that might provide an opportunity for a more focused discussion at the broader issue that Mr. Wood is trying to get at through his letters. So with that, as I noted previously, unless four or more commissioners vote to remove this item from the consent calendar, the permit will become effective. And that concludes my remarks, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have a speaker slip, and before we open up the public hearing on this, and I'd like to ask, is there any ex parties?
Yes, I received a call from Wendell Wood, and he described basically what Mr. Merrill said. His concern was that there's a number of these projects going on by Fish and Game, and that they are, in fact, related, and that he believed that there needed to be an analysis to look at the cumulative impacts of all of these. He also indicated to me that the staging area for these goats was the staging area for the goats for a number of other projects, and that the total number of goats that were in one area where they were staged were doing not in relationship to this project, but in fact were doing a great deal of environmental damage in that other area, and felt that as a staff report or a full hearing on this was necessary in order for people to understand what was really happening here.
Thank you, Commissioner Juan. With that, I'll open the public hearing. Mary Ann Matthews.
Good morning.
3 minutes, ma'am, is that fine?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Mary Ann Matthews, Conservation Chair for the local chapter of the California Native Plant Society. And my colleagues up in the North Coast chapter, which is Del Norte, Humboldt, and Trinity counties, asked me to pass on to you their views on this issue. And they did send you a letter, but it came rather late, so they wanted to make sure that someone was here to tell you why they support the permit. Basically, they feel that it's very important to use good science to find mitigations that really work and that can result in a win-win for both developers and the environment. And as this letter points out, plant conservation science has evolved considerably over recent years. And we realize now that in order to preserve rare species, you do not just go off and leave them alone. We have made too many changes in the environment, and in many cases, the only way to protect these species is active management. This project would involve mowing, livestock grazing, burning, manual release, which I guess is a euphemism for weeding, and it will be performed in a way that will protect the environment. So the basic message here is that we would like to see improvement in mitigations. We've seen a lot of really bad mitigations over the years that haven't worked. This seems to us to be a reasonable way to approach this and to develop more information so that in the future we can work to protect these important plant communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Matthews. Thank you for your testimony today. I'll close the public hearing and go back to Mr. Merrill. Any comments?
Only to note that the letter that Ms. Matthews refers to is in your green addendum. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Wan?
Yeah, I have some questions about you about this. I mean, I don't think the concern is with this particular project, but with the cumulative effects of this and some of the other projects. But mostly, I think, and it was hard to go through this stuff and try to get at what he was trying to say, has to do with, I think, is concerned about where they're staging these goats and the damage that's being done to the area where the goats are being staged. Do you know where they're being staged, and have you been able to look at the staging area to see if what he's saying is correct? Because from the photos, it looks, of great concern. How many goats are there? What's that are being used? What's the area the size of the area they're being staged in, and is that staging area creating a problem? So I think it's more that than how they're going to be used in this area for the project. But if the staging for this project is creating a problem, we need to know about it.
Yes, I think you're quite right, Commissioner. The photos that were submitted and much of the discussion in the letter focuses on an area on the Lake Earl Wildlife Area across Lake Earl from this site. And at one time, I understand there may have been upwards of 1,200 or 1,300 goats that were being herded and staged in a particular area for a different grazing project. The application for this project indicates that the staging will be done on the adjoining roads that are part of the Pacific Shore subdivision, the only actual infrastructure that exists out there. It isn't clear to us where they originally come from, whether they're from elsewhere in the county or out of state, but when they're doing the project, they're going to be staged on the roads adjacent to the test plots where this is going to occur.
Are there conditions in this permit that require that be the area that they be staged in and not other areas?
It's part of the project description. There is not a separate condition that specifically addresses that, but it is part of the project description that they would be in those areas, and to do otherwise would be something that wouldn't be authorized.
Okay, that's very important, because as long as they're staged on roads in the Pacific Shore subdivision, then it's clearly not creating a problem. However, while we're on this subject, if in fact they have been staging, as he contended, up to 1,400 goats in an area, we're not talking about roads, we're talking about an area that does have habitat, that needs to be looked at, because that could create a serious wildlife impact. As long as this one, do you know how many goats are involved?
I don't know the total number. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's much less than that. It's much smaller. There's about 5 acres involved total in the entire test project, so it's a considerably smaller number.
Okay. Well, I'm a little concerned about it. I'm not going to ask for it to be removed from the, but I am somewhat concerned that we don't have all the information that we might need on this, and that if Fish and Game has been staging 1,400 goats elsewhere, I just don't want us to be in a situation where we're going to have to be going out there and doing enforcement actions to make sure that they do what they say they're going to do. So I'm a sort of in a quandary here about
Commissioner,
how to deal with this.
One of the issues, and I was out there with Bob at one of the sites that we visited, where there was a violation going on. We're trying to resolve the violation, but while we were out there, goats were on the property, and we were talking to representatives of Fish and Wildlife, and they were asking the question of, is the Coastal Commission now going to start taking the position that bringing goats onto private property and anywhere else that requires a permit. And we said, no, we're not. We're still thinking about that, depending on where it is. But it's not an automatic issue for us that involves enforcement or development. It's a touchy issue that we have to decide in terms of when we make an issue out of it and when we don't, because goats are being used a lot in different areas. That's why we felt it was a good idea to have the workshop, which we're going to be planning for September. So it's an issue we're looking at. We have obviously the issues have been raised to a level that hadn't previously occurred, so we just don't have all the answers for you today.
Yeah, then that's one of the things that concerns me. This is not on private property. We're talking about a wildlife area, aren't we, here? That's why they've come to us.
We don't know where they're being staged. They may be staged on private property. We just don't know.
See, I hate to make work for staff, but when we have questions raised that we can't answer in an area like this, that sort of argues for some kind of a staff report to deal with this.
Well, if I might, the application does say that for this particular project, the small test pilot project, that the staging area will be on the roads. And we can emphasize to Fish and Game after this meeting that there's concern that that actually be the case and that they not stray from there. And as I noted, this project is not related to the others, and I would agree that there could be some concerns about other activities, particularly with the numbers of goats involved. But for this particular project, with its limited scope and with the staging on the roads, we think that it's consistent with the coastline.
All right, that's fine, but we do need to take a look and see what those other large numbers of goats, what they're involved in, and if they're involved in areas that are environmentally sensitive habitat, then that is something we need to deal with.
Commissioner Secord, I'm going to call for the question. If you don't, you have your light on. Do you want something?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Mr. Merrill. I think what I'm hearing is that goats are transported in a vehicle of some kind or a conveyance to something called a staging area. And the question she's raising is how many goats in the staging area and what is their risk of some burden to the staging area. Could you find out how they transport them and get some matrix to say that if you need 300 goats, how many truckloads that is, to get a sense of how much depredation 300 goats do? I think that's...
Yeah, they do transport them in by truck and by trailer, and in this case they are going to stage them on the roads, and we'll inquire with Fish and Game about the numbers involved in this particular project, and I can report that back to you at the next meeting.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Do four or more commissioners wish to have a full hearing on this? Hearing none. Hearing none. The administrative permit is approved right now. Thank you. North Central Coast District.
And with that, I'll turn the mic over to Dr. Lester.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. The North Central Coast District has one waiver to report today. This is a project to repair a damaged sections of the Spud Point Marina fuel dock facility, and I'm not aware of any objections. The project's been designed to protect water quality, and so we are recommending that the Commission waive the project.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the Commission concurs.
The North Central District also has one item on the calendar today, number 6A, and there is a PowerPoint presentation for this. This item is the de novo hearing on an appeal that was filed last year by third-party appellants, and the Commission found that the appeal raised a substantial issue in September of last year. The project is in Pacifica, and it's the construction of a 9-unit, 3-story condominium building with a subterranean garage. We are today recommending that the Commission approve the project with conditions. And before I get into the details of the project, I would like to add one condition that's not in the staff report, and that would be to include our standard prohibition on invasive species. There isn't a whole lot of landscaping area in this project, but the applicant is in agreement with adding a condition to prohibit invasives and assure that they don't persist on the site, including those listed on the California Invasive Plant Council inventory. Overall, the applicant is in agreement with the conditions, and so, again, we are recommending approval.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, I'll go to ex parte.
I'm waiting for the PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
Not sure.
I'm sorry. We're moving here.
I can.
I was goaded on that last subject, and so I'm moving. I'm moving on here.
I'm resisting other puns. It was bad. So the project is, as I mentioned, in Pacifica, and it's the proposed construction of a 9-unit, 3-story condominium building with a subterranean parking garage. This is the location of the project along Beach Boulevard in a parcel right here in Pacifica. This is an aerial view of the project site right here. And in general, it's an urban infill site. You can see that the overall area of the coastal zone here is highly urbanized. There's multifamily residential zoning in the area, including some apartment buildings and larger multifamily dwellings in the vicinity. There are single-family residences up coast in this direction. The other significant thing to note in this photograph is an existing seawall and revetment fronting that seawall, which is City of Pacifica seawall structure, which is protecting Beach Boulevard and a promenade here that fronts both the existing development and this site. The site previously had a single-family dwelling on it, which was demolished except for a little bit of the garage that's remaining here. This is a closer view of the site as it stands as of last week sometime. You can see that the site is essentially vacant and does not have any significant habitat or other resource values currently. This is a shot looking down the promenade that I mentioned. The public promenade goes all the way down coast to Sharp Park. You can catch a glimpse of the Pacifica Pier in the background there. So this is a significant public access area. This is a shot from that same general location looking up coast to the end of the promenade. You can see the revetment here and then just the tip of the site at issue today. This is stepping back a little bit, and you can see the vacant lot that would be developed and two adjacent existing multifamily dwellings. This is looking to the other direction across the street, just to give you a sense of the character of the neighborhood and the other types of development that are in this area. So looking again at the site, the proposal is to, again, build a 3-story condominium complex, and this is a representation from the applicant of what that structure would look like on that site. And again, from an ocean view, this would be the proposed condominium complex. The main issue here today is hazards and geotechnical concerns. And one of the overarching concerns from a hazard standpoint is tsunami hazards and tsunami run-ups. This shows you tsunami mapping and run-up zones. The project is in this area, so it is in a hazardous area, generally speaking, with respect to tsunami concerns. This is also the representation of other more specific hazards on the site, a flood insurance map showing the high hazard zone immediately along the shoreline, which basically ends at the base of the promenade and the seawall, and then the zone B, which is also considered a hazard zone, but covering approximately a third of the parcel here. So it is in a hazardous area, and issues that were originally raised on appeal by the appellants and that raised a substantial issue were conformance with the LCP's policies with respect to hazards, which essentially mirror the Coastal Act requirements. In two ways. One, that new structures, new development must be found to be safe and to minimize hazards from the shoreline environment, and also that no new seawall structures or shoreline structures would be required for that life of that development. This area of Pacifica does receive some significant storm hazard conditions and wave run-up. This is a shot from a neighboring property showing waves overtopping the existing revetment and seawall onto the street, onto Beach Boulevard. This is another view showing the results of some of that wave run-up. You can get the waves running up onto the elevations of 27 feet mean sea level or more. The existing seawall, my understanding, is at about 25 feet mean sea level, so you can get overtopping. This is another view. This is Beach Boulevard here. You can see the railing along the public promenade and some of the wave run up the edge of the existing property, and the site at issue is at back here on the end of the street. So in response to some of these issues, after the commission found substantial issue, and also prior to that, the applicant has made certain design changes to the project. Originally, when the city was considering this project, they had proposed to elevate the existing seawall by 2 feet to address this wave overtopping issue. And commission staff and others had advised that this would constitute essentially a new seawall in order to protect the new development, and that was not allowed under the LCP. That component was removed from the project at that time. The next proposal was to elevate Beach Boulevard itself and put some retaining walls along Beach Boulevard to essentially achieve the same sort of heightened elevation on shoreline protection. We have also considered that to be essentially an improvement or an expansion of an existing seawall for new development, and have recommended against that. So the current proposal does not rely on either a new seawall extension or raising of Beach Boulevard or retaining walls. The details of this are not as important as that it's the revised design that's been submitted by the applicant to show how they've eliminated the raising of Beach Boulevard and also don't have retaining walls involved as they did before, but rather would have an elevated driveway entrance that peaked at elevation 27, which is the recommended or suggested wave overtopping height under the 100-year storm conditions, with a trench drain to deal with any wave run-up that might occur during those instances. But this would be the entrance at the end of this cul-de-sac into the subterranean garage for the 9 units that would be above. So with that design change, the applicant has made efforts to address the question of wave run-up and high storm conditions and hazards posed by that flooding. That's not to say that there won't be flooding, and it's a little difficult to quantify, but there will be ongoing and repetitive storm events that involve hazardous conditions, including wave run-up. And so in addition to the design changes, which are memorialized in the staff recommended conditions, we are also recommending conditions that require the assumption of risk and also that assure that no future seawall development associated with protecting this proposed structure would be allowed. There's also a condition to require a tsunami preparedness plan. So overall, given the urban infill context of this property, the existing city seawall fronting the public road, the project redesign, and the conditions that have been agreed to by the applicant, staff is recommending that the project minimizes hazards in this context to a reasonable degree and recognition of that urban context, and recommending approval with those conditions. There are a number of people to speak on the project here today, and also Dr. Johnson is here to address any geotechnical issues that you may have questions about. That concludes the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Dr. Lester. Okay, with that, I'll come back to the commission for ex parties, starting on my left. Commissioner Blank?
Before this became an agendized item, I believe I got a call from the applicant's representative, Nadja, I don't know if she's here.
Holaberg.
Nadia Holloman. And she discussed the project with me, but it was not on the agenda at the time. I was also stopped in front of the DS yesterday by one of the opponents, and she just introduced herself, and I didn't even remember her name, but we didn't discuss anything substantive, and that's the sum of my ex parte.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Potter?
Mr. Chair, I had a meeting in my office, I believe it was last Friday, with Nadia Holleber, at which time she outlined the project and stressed that there had been more than adequate soil and geotechnical analysis done for the project. Yesterday, at the end of the meeting, I was approached by, I believe, Patrick Ranch, because he identified himself as one of the appellants, and there's only one male appellant, and he was male. And he said that he was going to stress that he didn't think there had been adequate soils analysis done, and that what had been done would prove that the site was not suitable for this development.
Thank you, Commissioner Potter. I had an ex parte on the 29th of February at 9 a.m. In La Jolla at Harry's Coffee Shop with Penny Alia and Dave Grubb of the Sierra Club. And they talked about how Mr. Massar and a group of environmental activists, including themselves, have been working on conveying their concerns to staff for well over a year on this project. The project is proposed is for a super unstable environment that's very dangerous and prone to erosion. And in 1989, just three doors down from this proposed development site, most of the homes fell in the ocean due to the area's instability. The north end of the seawall adjacent to this area is already falling apart, which means that additional shoreline protection devices will be required to build this proposed project. The issue alone is not consistent with Coastal Act policies. Those appealing this project have indicated that perhaps the development of one unit placed as far back as possible on the site without a subterranean parking area might be doable. So that was the extent of my ex parte on the 29th of February. Anyone else? Okay, and with that, I'll open the public hearing and go to Nadia Holleber for the applicant. And there's a couple other speakers here. I take it David Skelly is here, and Joel Baldwin is part of your organizer.
Yes.
They're here to answer questions, or they're going to present something. How much time are you asking for, and how much time will they be using?
I understand that we have 10 minutes, and we will be splitting that time. I don't think we'll need the full 10 minutes.
Okay. You're going to take how much of the 10 minutes do you want?
I'll probably take 5.
And then Mr. Skelly's here to answer technical questions.
That's correct.
And then Mr. Joel Baldwin, he's part of your team. Is he going to speak then?
Yes. Mr. Baldwin and Earth Consultants, Inc. is the geotechnical group that did not only the testing for this area, which included boring some 15.5 feet deep,
okay,
but also did prior analysis in the area, some of which we believe the appellant might be citing.
Okay, is there anyone else as part of that's representing the applicant here? I'm just trying to...
No, I believe that there are people in support, but they are here as members of the public.
Okay, fine. So 10 minutes, and you can use whatever amount of time at 10 minutes, and then also we'll reserve for you, the commission, 3 minutes of time for rebuttal if you so desire.
Is that part of the 10?
No, it's not. It'll be on top of your 10.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, so you can have 10 minutes and use whatever 10, and then whenever you stop, Mr. Baldwin will get the balance of that time.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I want to thank the commission. I want to thank staff for the positive report.
Name
also,
for the record, please.
My name is Nadia Holleber. I have an office in San Jose. It's part of the record. I am here on behalf of the applicant. The City of Pacifica has a certified coastal plan that includes such things as height, setback, floor area, and proper zoning for particular areas. This has been certified by your commission, and this project, as presented to you today, meets all of those requirements. There are absolutely no variances needed. This is within zoning, within height restrictions, within setback restrictions. This is a multifamily residential unit in an area predominated by multifamily residential units. We do have some slides. Some of them might be repetitive of the slides shown by staff, but if you can just bear with us for a moment. May we please have our disc? May we please have our disc, Nadia? Thank you.
She has a disc.
She has a disc.
Okay, this is ours. Thank you. This, again, is the area. This is the appellant's property here, the next-door neighbor, and this is where one of the other appellants resides. This is our property here. Oops. This is a close-up. And this here, again, is our property. This is the existing driveway from the old residence. This is the same place the driveway will be located for the new residence. This, again, is the flood map that shows that we are clearly out of the 100-year floodplain. This is the structure behind the behind and around our property. It is 77 Polona, where one of the appellants resides. And this, again, is our block with the proposed project right here. Close-up of first the appellant's property and then the proposed property. Oh, and this is why everybody wants to live there. This project from the beginning has been designed to be a very green project. It's very environmentally friendly. LEED certification is being sought. It is energy efficient. It is the only solar-powered property we believe in the area. It will utilize green building materials for such amenities as the floors, the cabinets, and fly ash will be used in the concrete. All the analysis to date has showed that this will not adversely affect the environment. It will not adversely affect the seawall in front, the neighboring properties, Shoreview Drive revetment up to the north, or wave reflection. There has been a mitigated negative deck. In preparing that negative deck, the staff looked at 2 geotechnical investigations, 3 technical investigations, 2 coastal hazard studies. 2 more coastal hazard studies have been prepared during the time of the hearing of the City Council. Since then, at least 2 more coastal hazard studies have been done in preparation for our presentation here today. Earth Investigation Consultants, the same experts who prepared the engineering geological evaluation for 220 Shoreview, which I think you'll hear from the appellants regarding, is the same geotechnical experts that did the analysis for this specific property. The garage flooding issue has been mitigated in a number of ways. First of all, it has been moved from the front of the property, which was the initial plan, to around the side. Second of all, the driveway has been raised at one point to cross at 27 feet, thus preventing some of the water that normally would get into the garage that would have to, the water have to work its way around the building and around the side and down the driveway. That has been mitigated. The analysis to date has consistently said that water entering the garage will only happen on rare and extreme events, some pictures of which you saw today. Today we have with us the consultant who will be speaking with you following my presentation. We also have for your information and any questions you might have the Geosoils Inc. consultant who did all the coastal hazard studies to date. We are in agreement with all the conditions. The one request we would have, if it pleases the commission, is the timing. We do note that we now are on our third planner, and we thank very much. We've enjoyed working with Mr. Lester. We would appreciate if some of the conditions, particularly 2, which is a post-construction drainage plan, 3, the tsunami preparedness plan, and 7, the deed restriction documents, can be prepared prior to certificate of occupancy rather than prior to issuance of the permit. And with that, I would like to introduce Mr. Joel Baldwin.
You're lucky to have a planner with our budget.
Good morning, commissioners, staff. My name is Joel Baldwin, principal engineering geologist with Earth Investigations Consultants. Our firm performed the geotechnical investigation for the proposed project.
The results of that investigation found that we had no problems with landsliding, fault rupture, or secondary effects from strong shaking, which will occur in this area, such as liquefaction. Our report was peer-reviewed and accepted by the City of Pacifica, and that's basically all I have to say right now. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to help you with them.
Just one quick question.
Yes, sir.
Because you're the consultant. Do you have just one access in and out of the contemplated 9-unit condominium site? Does that meet fire standards up in your area?
That is out of my field of expertise. I trust, being a resident and having built in Pacifica, I believe that is correct.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Next speaker. Okay. Nancy Merchant.
If I could just add that this has been approved by the fire department. And with regard to is there only one access, there are also exits out the back.
Okay. Your name for the record, just.
Again, I'm Nadia Holliper. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Nancy Merchant, and you have an organized presentation, and you're going to take 2 minutes, I take it?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Nancy Merchant. I'm an appellant. Good morning, honorable commissioners and staff. In preparing for this hearing, I hope you found in your stack of papers not only the staff report, but also the deputy director's report, which contains documents and pictures from the appellants that were apparently too late to be integrated into the staff report. And there are also letters from a former mayor of Pacifica and a former planning commissioner. Both believe that the recommendation for approval seems contradictory to staff's beliefs about the long-term safety and viability of this project. Page 14 of the staff report acknowledges that there is no question that the project is located in a hazardous area. It further states risks to vehicular and pedestrian access to and from the property during periods of wave overtopping are significant. Yet on page 20, the report states that risk cannot be further significantly mitigated short of a major downsizing. Despite many more statements in the staff report about the hazards and risks of this project, including many of the special conditions, I am wondering why staff isn't recommending that the project be scaled back to better work with the challenges of the site. The Coastal Commission condition for approval, which eliminates the retaining wall and the raising of Beach Boulevard, is at direct conflict with the risk management components that the city relied upon when approving the project. This project still does not comply with LCP 26A to minimize risks to life and property. Even though the staff report recommends approval, in my mind, it supplies a lot of evidence why the project should not be approved. Therefore, I urge the commission to deny the permit. Thank you.
Okay, would you stop there? Thank you, ma'am. Patrick Wrench, you have 8 minutes, sir, you're requesting as the organizer.
Yes, actually, I'd like to do, 10 minutes, and if I don't use that, any of the balance, I'd like to go to Mr. Massara. Is that possible?
It's certainly possible. Between all of you, I'm happy to give you 15 minutes. So if you're going to use 10, that'll leave 3 minutes left for Mr. Massara, if that's what you wish to
right.
do.
Right. And frankly, I don't expect to use all 10. I'll try and keep this fairly brief. My name is Patrick Wrench. I'm the appellant, and a little background, because I imagine you aren't super familiar with the area. So this is the area itself. You can see that this is a major collapse. It's directly in front of where the development is currently proposed to be. Fast forwarding 30 years, you can see that there's been great cove expansion due to erosion, and this is the emergency repair that was done in 2002. This is a rough idea of where the driveway is proposed, and I'm not opposed to development on this site. However, I think that this plan does not conform to the LCP, and specifically LCP 26A, which says that new development shall minimize hazards to life and property in areas of high risk. So you can see that the driveway is really on the edge of here. It's on the edge of the seawall. It's not supported by anything. Just rock revetment is there. And also, the cars will be forced to drive directly across here, right on the edge of the seawall. The original mitigations were to raise the seawall, raise the road. Those have all been eliminated in the new plan submitted by the applicant. And it really raises the danger level to an unacceptable level. We've talked about, we're going to skip that slide. They've said wave overtopping is rare or occurs on average a few times a year. We just heard Nadia Holober say that was a rare extreme event. It's not rare at all. It happens all the time. It's very dangerous. It's so dangerous, in fact, Pacifica now has new signage specifically warning people to stay away from the seawall. And yet we're going to, have people be forced to drive immediately there. So they've also talked about this, being only happening during storms. And this is an example from just the February 9th of this year, one day. As you can see, it's a beautiful day. It's calm. It's not windy. No swell. There's no waves. And yet, over the course of 3 hours, we have like this, an hour later like this, an hour later like this. These are all significant overtoppings. And we'll put water 40 feet back from the edge of the seawall. We also get this. This is massive overtopping. This will dump water 70 feet back from the seawall. And yet again, they still want to have their cars being immediately upon driving through this. There is no other access into the building except to go this way. Yesterday, you were interested in some statistics, so I've got some for you. The overtopping can occur for more than 3 hours at a time. That significant overtopping can occur more than once a minute. I recorded 39 times in 30 minutes. During that same 30 minutes, three times we had massive overtopping where water hit my building 70 feet back. I live next door. I've lived there for 10 years. I'm very familiar with this area. And that calm day I showed you, it was perfect. We had a 5.7-foot tide that day. And according to NOAA charts, we've had 5'7" or higher tides 24 days in January, 22 days in February, 75% of the time. So this isn't a rare event. This happens all the time. On calm days, it happens day and night. So talk about what happens during a storm, where we have large swells, 60-mile-an-hour winds. Waves can bend and actually shear off steel rail, and that's exactly where these people are going to be driving. Waterborne debris. This is a piece of driftwood 70 feet backwards between their fence and my stairs. Okay. Again, this is from our January 4th storm this year. This house, which is not adjacent but one next to it, had to be completely boarded up because the waves blew doors out of the frames. Okay. That house was entirely overtopped. Waves went over the house and landed on the street on the other side. Okay. So, on the driveway itself, here are some boulders. These boulders weigh several tons. They're exactly in the position where the driveway is going to be. This is, again, our January 4th storm event this year. Damaged the set of boulders, knocked them down the hill. Now, if the waves can push several ton boulders around that are, in essence, sitting on level ground, what are they going to do to a car that's coming up a sloped, wet ramp? This is a huge danger. People are going to get hurt. Property's going to get hurt. And I don't see any way to mitigate it. I mean, the applicants have not properly mitigated against this damage. This is an analysis by their coastal engineer, Mr. Skelly. With continued repair and maintenance of both the revetment and the RE wall, the shore protection may last a long time. I think that falls somewhat short of the 100-year lifespan that you typically are looking for. There's some peer review that talks about overcharging and overstressing the wall. Will the wall fail? Again, by putting the cars really on the edge of the road, you're stressing the thing to the max, placing people in danger. One alternative was presented by, this is a planning staff of Pacifica. It should be noted that an alternative plan that would not necessitate the seawall to be altered may involve a less intensive development with a greater front yard setback and or the location of the garage entrance to the rear of the building. And again, this is really all about our LCP, LCP 26A, to minimize risk to life and property in areas of high hazard. And this building simply doesn't meet that standard. In concluding about this, under Section 306.04B, when the Commission conducts a de novo hearing, the Commission must find that proposal development is in conformity with the certified LCP. I don't see how anyone can say that this proposed development is minimizing risk. Can they develop there? Absolutely. Is this the right plan? No, I don't think it is. I think that we should send it back to the developer and give them an opportunity to produce something. They can certainly do something nice there. But this plan in and of itself, this is not what we should be approving. We need to take a second look at this. And that's really the point I'm here to make today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Massara, since there's time, you can have your 5 minutes that you requested.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, Commissioners Mark Massara, Sierra Club Coastal Program. I also have a PowerPoint, some of the pictures of which you've already seen. In this case, you have a hulking 29,000 square foot, 9-unit condominium project on and proposed for one of the most unstable, dangerous eroding bluffs in all of California, a stretch where numerous houses have fallen off the bluffs and into the ocean since 1998, just 10 years. Along this stretch, and where an entire apartment building is now facing collapse and disaster, and ironically, it's the front page of today's local newspaper, which we'll submit for your review, because the city has some very interesting comments about their unwillingness to deal with protecting private property and adopting a retreat strategy to face global climate change and sea rise. So the first slide, are we having trouble getting this up?
We're holding the time for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's Apple computer. It's giving him trouble. I apologize for the lack of clarity on these slides, but what I meant to show with the 1972 picture was that this entire stretch of coastline was unarmored and also had a large sandy beach, and the adjacent single-family homes had large backyards. Next slide. And even as late as 1979, this stretch of coastline had natural unarmored bluffs and a large sandy beach. The relevant question here is why allow a single family lot of less than a half an acre in size to be subdivided and the intensity increased and in essence invite 9 new owners to face a certain future that involves erosion, flooding, wave overtopping, and certain catastrophe. The project is out of character with neighboring houses. The large apartment building picture that you saw from the applicants is a block back. Generally along the coast, you have single family homes in this area and some 2 and 4 unit apartment buildings. And while it's commendable that staff has sought to place the burden for these hazards that will occur on the developer, we've got to face reality here. The developer's going to be long gone. You're going to have 9 new innocent condominium owners that are trying to drive to their house through waves that are crashing up on their driveway and into their subterranean garage. The subterranean garage and the consultants' analysis are very interesting because on every single letter that's submitted and the exhibits in your packet, they qualify and hedge these assertions regarding the ability of this project to have a 100-year lifespan to such an extent that you can't rely on this stuff. And in fact, on Exhibit 12, the peer review people come right out and say that they're not qualified to be making these assessments, but they go ahead and do it anyway. And staff reads this stuff and says, we've got assertions and certifications that this is going to last 100 years. Well, if you look at these pictures, and let's go to the next slide. This is 1987. You've got riprap along the shorefront, and this is about when the Coastal Conservancy gave money to the City of Pacifica to initially construct the promenade that's now falling apart, that the City of Pacifica is continuously dumping more riprap and working with staff to try to save this road and promenade. Next slide. No, that's backwards. Okay, this is more recent stuff. And if you begin to look at when the promenade was built in 1987 through 2002 and later, what you find is that the existing single-family homes built after World War II have not even made it to half of their expected lifespan, and the promenade didn't even last 25 years. So for us to think that this project is going to last even a third of its expected life, and especially based on what we have in terms of the geoscience on this thing, is, I think, rather foolish. If you look at page 16 of the staff report, staff and the developer agree that the garage is going to be periodically flooded. I call that routine and regular based on the fact that waves crash over this existing structures all the time. But the developer says that's a rare and unique event. Well, what they said in the staff report is that it's periodic, and I take that to mean regular. Recall that years ago you approved a project on the Wallala Bluffs in Mendocino County reluctantly, advised the homeowner not to build the house because waves were expected to crash on top of it. Well, here you have a similar situation. There is a single-family home project on this site that could be built on the east side of the property, but you don't want to intensify development, allow subdivision of this site, and invite numerous owners into what is a very dangerous situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Massara. Mr. Fernandez? Rogue Fernandez? Then Mike Bell, 3 minutes. 3 minutes, sir.
My name is Rock Fernandez. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm in support of this project. I see that the building is a beautiful building. It's going to enhance the neighborhood. It's kind of interesting to see the neighbor who's complaining doesn't have the same elements of the weather system as the building is going to, but he's not moving. He's staying there. And I think this project is definitely going to be a benefit to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mike Bell and Rick Lee.
Good morning. My name is Mike Bell. I live at 1 Carmel Avenue in Pacifica. I live approximately 300 feet away from this project. I actually had a whole bunch of different things to say, but after seeing this last PowerPoint, I'm really alarmed about it. I'm in favor of this project. Just quickly, the reason I'm in favor of it, I have a master's in architecture from Cal Berkeley. I'm a commissioner on the Parks, Beach, and Recreation Commission in Pacifica, resident since 1956. I've lived on Beach Boulevard itself for about the last 13 years, I think. And The issues I have now is that the inflammatory nature of the photographs and the testimony that the appellants are raising, I live there. So I can tell you for a fact, for instance, the bent railing picture that he showed, I know exactly why that railing was bent. Somebody had driven an ATV up the beach during low tide, got stuck. They had to pull them out, and the equipment that reached over the rail to pull them up bent the rail. That's why the rail's bent. I saw it. I was there. It's right in front of my house. The homes falling into the ocean that the appellant's referring to, that's about a mile up the coast. It's sandy cliffs that are I don't know how tall they are, maybe 60, 70, 80 feet tall. It's an entirely different situation. The overtopping is rare. I've lived there, like I said, for 12 years. I've never had flooding. In fact, most of the flooding that's occurred has been as a result. It's been on the other end of Beach Boulevard, down by the pier, because the outfall got clogged with sand, so the water couldn't evacuate quickly. The area has apartment buildings, and it really is an urban environment. Again, it's not true that it's just single-family homes and small little developments in the area. Large apartment buildings are everywhere in the area, all along Beach Boulevard. There's a huge condominium complex down there. And lastly, the wall breach that was shown on that picture, the date was 1970. The wall wasn't there in 1970. So it's they're really kind of, I think, using fear here. This thing has been well engineered. It has been. I've been following this project for about 3 years. I live there. I want to know what's being built in my neighborhood, and I've seen the developer go through every hoop that this group has asked him to jump through. He's hired soils engineers, hydraulic engineers, structural engineers. It's passed the planning commission, the city council, and I think, unfortunately, what we have here is they have every right in the world to appeal. This is America, but it makes me sad that they're kind of using this body to try to stretch this thing out and basically drive the developer away.
Sir, your time's up.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rick Lee. And Kathleen Wall.
I'll try and keep it short, too. Yeah, 20-year resident of Pacifica, 2 years in this neighborhood in particular. And I just want to say that this project has been scaled back. It was originally 14 units, and it's been scaled back to 9. I've also been following it for a long time. The appellants and Mr. Massera misrepresent the site and where the erosion is. I mean, there is erosion in the area, but it's in other areas. The photos you saw show that there is a seawall, there's revetment, there's a city street, all these things in place, and then the project. So, I mean, the stuff that they were showing didn't include any of that. The reports that have been provided by the applicant, the geotechnical and the oceanographic reports and all, I mean, they're serious documents, peer-reviewed, and from what I'm hearing, the appellants are providing speculation. I wish they would provide something evidential fact. And this is an infill project on a previously developed site. It'll be an improvement to the neighborhood, and it's been supported by staff after very, very much review. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Kathleen Wall and then George Mazingo.
Good morning, commissioners. I appreciate your taking the time. I'm here speaking in favor of this project because I feel that it's a beautiful building and will hopefully be the start of the much-needed improvement.
Your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry?
Your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kathleen Wall.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm hoping that it will be the start of a much-needed improvement of Pacifica's coastline. It has always saddened me that Pacifica seems to always be in a state of decline when it should be like Carmel, when it should be like Pismo Beach, it should be like Monterey. Instead, it's a bunch of dilapidated buildings right along the coast. They're ugly. It was stated here that this project will be out of character for the neighborhood. Well, I say thank God, because that neighborhood needs to be fixed. It has been my experience that when a new project comes in or when people do remodeling of their homes, the next thing you know, this happened on my street last year, The next thing you know, I remodeled my house. The next thing you know, three or four houses on the block are looking better and perkier. This is an important project for Pacifica, and I've worked with this architect before. He designs beautiful buildings that are an asset to the community. I think that is all, except for one last comment. There was talk about condo owners, unsuspecting condo owners coming in and hearing about, you know, and not knowing about any of this. My experience with condo projects, and especially in today's environment, is that the disclosures are this thick. They will not, there will be disclosures galore indicating that that there is danger of water intrusion. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. George Mozingo.
Good morning, Commissioners. George Mozingo. I'm here to speak in favor of this project. I will not take much more of your time because everything I wanted to say previously has been said, especially by Ms. Wall. This project, any project in a community such as this one where there's a previously unused site is being reused, redeveloped as high-density housing in this really beautifully situated location is the kind of project we're all looking for. It is, again, high-density urban infill, and as the appellant has, I mean, as the applicant has said, with significant green building measures. So this is the kind of project that we look for, certainly the kind of project that our community needs, and thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll go back for rebuttal to Nadia Holber for your 3 minutes of rebuttal time. Yeah.
Commissioner Kruer, Dave Skelly with the applicant. Nadia's going to follow me. I just wanted to address a couple issues. I'm the coastal engineer for the project. I think the commission is smart enough to look at pictures and know the difference between splash and overtopping. Splash is directed vertically. Overtopping comes over the top. If you look at a lot of these pictures, you'll really see what really is coming across that water is, across the boulevard, is water that's on the order of inches and possibly a foot deep. And that kind can be managed. The other thing you have to realize is that all along Beach Boulevard, the elevation isn't the same. I mean, when you approve a project in Oceanside along the Strand's at elevation 10. There's subterranean parking right on the other side of the Strand. Here we have a project that's at elevation 27, 17 feet higher. So it's a lot safer. So I think there's a precedent for this kind of development. It's smart. The more important thing is the finished floor elevation of all the habitable floors is well above the existing finished floor elevations of the adjacent properties and well out of the danger from flooding. Mark Massar is a friend of mine. It's fun to come here and see him. We always disagree. We agree on a lot of things like surfing, but I think there's been some misrepresentation on both sides. Particularly Mr. Wrench provides you an oblique photograph taken at an angle. Then he takes a flat plan view and places it on the oblique photograph. And if you were to look carefully, you would actually see that that plan view goes on to his property. So it kind of really distorted the true picture. I'm also here to answer any technical questions. Nadia?
Thank you. With that, she wanted to say, come up and you want to finish the... Okay, state your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Nadia Holliver, and I also am here to answer questions. I just want to reiterate this is an infill project. It is a step-back, three-story building in an area predominated by just this kind of building. The appellant next door has a multifamily dwelling that he rents out to people that seem to live there and live there safely. The appellant around the block lives in a much larger complex than this. You saw the slides for yourself. It is inaccurate that this is a 29,000 square foot building. For the record, it's about 10,000 less than that. With regard to coastal hazard reports, your own website shows that in this area, the sea level rise due to climate change is projected to be about 6 inches. We did a study based on a 3 foot level rise over the next 100 years. And with that, again, I want to thank Dr. Lester and his planners before him, who are no longer with the commission. I want to thank all of you, and I want you to know the appellant really recognizes that a 3-day commitment every month, plus all the homework, is really quite an extraordinary service, and we thank you.
Thank you, and with that, I'll close the public hearing. I'll return to Dr. Lester's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly again, we did evaluate the hazards issues carefully here. There's no question that it's a hazardous site and that there are issues to be addressed. There have been significant project changes through the unfolding of this particular development. And as I summarized in the presentation, staff made a judgment. There are, you know, some judgments here about how to manage the risks and specifically identify them and what the specific response should be. But overall, given the urban infill context, the existing city seawall revetment, and the public road that's fronting the project redesign, and the conditions that have been agreed to by the applicant concerning no future seawall development and assumption of risk, and those standard conditions that the commission has been imposing in hazardous situations where, like here, we do have expert representation from the applicant that there will not be a significant risk to the project for its 100-year life. We made the judgment that that was sufficient to provide for the approval recommendation. Our coastal engineer and Dr. Johnson have evaluated the technical questions here, and I believe Dr. Johnson wanted to add just a few comments. No, I guess he doesn't. So we're available for questions.
Well, thank you, Dr. Johnson. You recognize it's Friday. Thank you. But we will have probably some questions for you. So glad you're here. Okay, and with that, I'll return to the commission and recognize Commissioner Riley first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move commission approve coastal development permit number A-2-PAC-07. -022 pursuant to staff recommendation. Request a yes vote.
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Riley and seconded by Commissioner Blank. And both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, and passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit as condition and adoption of the resolutions and findings contained in the staff report. Would you like to speak to your motion, Commissioner Riley?
Just briefly, Mr. Chair. I think staff has made a reasonable recommendation based on extensive analysis, and the preponderance of the professional assessment on this indicates, I think, supports their recommendation.
Thank you, Commissioner Riley. Commissioner Blank?
I agree with Commissioner Riley. I just think this project typifies the debate that's going to be ongoing and probably more extreme as we do have more severe weather events between retreat or protection. And you know, I think it's something both the commission, the legislature, and the general public in California are going to have to deal with. I would like to make an amending motion as well.
You can do that at this point.
And maybe staff or commissioners can help me. Because this is a condo and we're asking for deed restriction on no raising Beach Boulevard and no additional seawalls, I don't believe... maybe this is for Director Douglas, we've ever required those to be part of the sale documents. I understand it shows up in a title report, but have we ever required restrictions to be in the sale documents themselves? Better disclosure for...
I'm not positive about sale documents, but I am familiar with at least one case where the CCNRs, the covenants and conditions and restrictions, included... recognition of a coastal permit and the conditions there.
Let me be clear what I'm asking for. Is I've even in the short time I've been on the commission, we've dealt with a lot of cases of I didn't know when I bought the property. I just think this is a good example where title will pass from the developer to 9 individual owners, and I bet you 15 years from now, if there is an issue, one of them will say, I don't remember. And then I'm just asking is that maybe we want to upgrade our process to actually require and the executive director approve that not just in the CCNRs but in the sale document that there's a black box warning that says here are the conditions that you are buying this thing on. And if the applicant believes this is not an issue, then since everybody will know, then not a problem.
We can
Director Douglas?
We can incorporate that into the recommendation. Right.
So that's my motion. If
Commissioner Blank.
Okay.
Commissioner Blank, okay. I have just a clarification on your amending motion. Well, they're going to incorporate it in.
Great.
But I think the real key issue here, other than what you talked about, you just raised a very good issue, is what happens to the assumption of risk.
Yes.
Typically, when you're a developer and you take the assumption of risk, you have the assumption of risk. But when you convey your last condominium and you have no ownership in the project anymore, et cetera, then there's no one that has the there's the problem. And how are you? Is your intent to try to cover that too?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
we may. We think that is covered. Let me ask Charles to.
Yes, we have an assumption of risk condition, and that I was incorporating your suggestion also that would be incorporated into both the legal
documents
the
sale document.
And the sale document.
In the sale document.
Yeah.
So each condominium owner would assume the risk right. when they acquire the property.
Right. That's. I don't know if we've had that before. That's what we should do.
I think that's new. Okay.
That's what I'm proposing. Yeah. Is that
have we done it?
Yes. The permit and all of those conditions run with the land, so it does move into each condominium owner's title.
Right. Just for counsel, it's the disclosure part of it. I understand legally it does, but historically, I don't think we've made it clear up front to both applicants and then their purchasers that that's right. a requirement that Coastal Commission
No, you're right.
Presents.
You're right.
That's a good suggestion. We can do that.
Right.
Okay.
So
that's
with
fine.
That,
I think
my comments are done. Thank you.
Okay. You've incorporated those into the motion. Okay. Yeah. Anyone else want to speak before
yes.
Commissioner Wan and Commissioner Schellenberg and Commissioner Secord? Okay.
I still have concerns, and here's why. You can talk about the assumption of risk all you want, and there's clearly hazards here. That's the reason why the city originally wanted that Beach Boulevard raised, because in fact there is an overtopping issue. Otherwise, they wouldn't have asked for it to have been raised. And you can warn people all you want when their houses start, when they start having these problems. And I agree with Mr. Massara, the homeowner who assumes and buys a condominium. He doesn't necessarily, because it's been approved, he doesn't necessarily understand the full implications of the wave overtopping, even if there's a statement in there that says that he's assuming risks and liabilities. And I am concerned about how this impacts the future homeowner and how this is consistent with the LCP, which talks about not building in hazardous areas or minimizing the risks. And so I'm just a little uncomfortable with the fact that the only access road to these homes is right along the edge of that seawall. And what happens when you do have waves overtopping it and people need to be driving through that? How do they deal with that issue? And perhaps our geologists can talk to us. Is there going to be wave overtopping? And if there is, how does a car manage to get into those condominiums under those circumstances?
Commissioner, thank you. There is no question that there will be wave overtopping occasionally. As Mr. Skelly indicated, the very dramatic photos that you saw you're mostly seeing spray. You're not seeing actual force of the waves going over there. But within the 100-year time scale that we're looking at, and with sea level rise, there will be occasions when waves do overtop and flood the garage. For most of those times, cars will be able to drive next to the spray, and other times I think they'll just have to avoid it.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Secord and then Commissioner Schellenberger.
Commissioner Wan asked my question, and I support the disclosure as thoroughly as we can make it.
Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yeah, a question for staff. I'm looking at plate number one. It's in the staff report. The first street map at the end of the staff report. It's exhibit number one. And That looks to me, does Bell Vista still exist?
My understanding is that's a paper street right-of-way, that there's not a street there.
Okay, so then looking at Exhibit 2, it is correct, or is it correct, that this is actually a dead-end road here. It dead-ends at the project site.
That's correct.
And then a third question, just for information. It looked to me, particularly in the slide that you had up, that the road... right where it dead ends, where it bends the most, actually overhangs. Is there an overhang there?
If the question is about the property lines, if you're looking at that Exhibit 3, you can see the easement you were asking about, the narrow delineated strip, which the proposed driveway would overhang, and there has been an issue ongoing at the local level about property ownership and the lines, and the city determined that this was part of their property and appropriately developed.
Part of
the applicant's property,
applicant's
and
property.
Also that an appropriate use of the public right-of-way as well. So there is overlap on the property lines, and then with respect to the physical development, if that's what you're asking about, it would be very close to the edge of and the top of the existing revetment that is protecting. Also, you can't see in the photos very well, but there's a large city outfall underneath the revetment there.
Okay, just as a layperson, it doesn't, I mean, I'm sure you've looked at it, it doesn't appear to be a very stable structure when you're on the coastline like this, because you have waves coming up underneath it, underneath that small portion of the driveway.
Well, there is a revetment fronting that area, so the waves would be striking that revetment first. Okay. It's essentially a hardened coastline at that location. Right. You did see a slide from 2002 with a road coming down, which was a temporary access put in place by the city to maintain the revetment.
Okay, thank you.
Just a couple of questions to staff on this. I guess my concern, or my question would be, is in looking at this site, one of the key ingredients would be to try to avoid building the subterranean garage. Not only is it expensive, but that's what collects all the water, and built a lot of subterranean garages, and they become very problematic, especially when you're building them right next to the coast. So the question is, did we have any discussion, or does anyone know how all the water is going to get out of the subterranean garage, the concept?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that there's been a lot of discussion of that, and I would agree, if I was the developer, I wouldn't want a subterranean garage there. However, staff feels that it is consistent with the Coastal Act. The subterranean garage will have a drain that goes directly into the city storm drain outfall, and the water should drain directly out into the storm drain system.
Well, that's one of the problems I have with it, too, because you have all the car problems and you have all the oil and everything else. My concern looking at this is that I personally, if I had been, I would have built a smaller project, not built a subterranean garage, held it back, wouldn't have this Mickey Mouse access going in, questioned the fire access. They said it's approved by the fire department, and build some townhouses or more units, and I could probably derive the same economic benefit out of the project than putting on this project, these 9 units. Personally, I think it's a mistake, and I'm going to vote against it. Okay. Anyone else?
Yes.
Let's vote. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just want to comment on this project. I'm representing the Business Transportation and Housing Agency, and I think the project offers advantages from the standpoint of business, transportation, and housing. It is an urban infill project, precisely the kinds of projects that we are trying to encourage. The governor's put forward his strategic growth plan. We have underway a regional blueprint planning process. which relies greatly upon urban infill projects of this type, and this is consistent with the neighborhood architecture as I see from the photographs we saw today. The regional blueprint plan calls for reduction of trips, reduction of vehicle miles traveled, reduction of emissions, jobs and housing closer to one another, and I think that this kind of project offers those sorts of advantages and possibilities. And I think it's important to point out that infill development of this sort is precisely the kind that we need in order to achieve all of those goals.
Okay, well, there was one last question somebody wanted.
Chairman Kruer pointed out about the water, and you said the water drains out of, are there filters on that? Because he's right about the, are we requiring filtration of that water as it goes out?
I never get the water.
Because the garage is notoriously bad for collecting oils and grease.
Yes, Commissioner Juan, we have a drainage plan condition with BMPs.
Thank you.
Well, just we're going to call the question, but just remember, I pointed this one out to you. You better have a boat if you have a vehicle in that car there, in that garage. Anyway, so with that, will clerk call the roll? The maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes.
Commissioner Clark.
Yes.
Commissioner Wesel.
Yes.
Commissioner Secord.
Yes.
Commissioner Neely?
Yes.
Commissioner Potter?
Aye.
Commissioner Riley?
Yes.
Commissioner Schallenberger? Yes. Commissioner Wine?
No.
Chairman Kruer?
No. The
8-2.
The project passes and hereby approves. We approve a coastal development permit for the proposed development, and we adopt the findings that are set forth in this staff report. Okay. Next item.
Mr. Chairman, that brings us to the rest of the North Coast District portion of the agenda, starting with the Deputy Director's report. I will just comment on a couple of items. One is a follow-up to your January meeting when you considered the Fort Bragg LCP update, just to let you know that the city has been holding workshops and has considered the suggested modifications. They do have some slight changes that they want to propose, and they've been working with us. At this point, we believe the changes are consistent with the intent of the Commission's action, and if it stays that way, we're likely to bring back the resolutions and ordinances where they accept the modifications with minor changes at the July meeting. The other thing I want to touch on is we have talked with an individual, a commercial fisherman, who was driving his truck along the Samoa Peninsula in the area of the Humboldt Bay Harbor District dredge spoil disposal operation. And this unfortunate individual managed to get his truck stuck in the discharge on the beach to the point where the truck was totally buried and is now a total loss. And he raised questions about whether the permit that the commission issued had requirements for warning signs. There is a condition requiring warning signs. We're looking into it to make sure that those were in place. He also submitted some photos, and we'll be looking at that as well. Other than that, I just want to point out that you do have a pink addendum in front of you that contains three permit waivers. One immaterial permit amendment and one permit time extension. We're aware of no opposition to these items, and we recommend that the Commission concur with the staff's determinations.
Okay. Is there any objection to finding concurrence?
Seven.
Hold on. Good catch. I thought we...
When we come back, I have some... We got him.
Any objection to finding concurrence? Hearing none, the commission concurs. Commissioner Wan?
I have a quick question of Mr. Merrill. I wasn't here, so I don't know if you discussed the fact that in that area where they're having the discharge, I saw photos that looked very troubling to me in terms of whether or not the district is really complying not just with the signs, but with the discharge requirements. They were, that stuff that was coming out was digging that huge hole, okay? And I'm wondering if they're really complying with our conditions.
We did actually observe the operation as it was going on. That is one of the aspects of the project that was objectionable and why we have concerns about the continued use next time. But we'll look at these photos. We haven't looked through all of them yet. There may be other issues that are raised, and we'll check that out.
Well, I think the point Bob is making, and I checked into this after Commissioner Neely brought it to my attention earlier this week, was that our staff person, Jim Baskin, did go on site while this was ongoing and determined that they were in compliance. They did. He did require them to make some changes, including, I believe, signage much closer to the discharge site. But this is one of the things that happens when you have this kind of a methodology for disposing of dredge materials. And I think that's one of the reasons why this commission said this will be the last time for this kind of a disposal discharge system. So I hope the district gets that message. And I hope they're watching.
Okay.
That brings us, there is no consent calendar for the North Coast, so we move on to item 9A, which is an appeal by Commissioners Wan and Riley, and a separate appeal from Kirk Roberts and Natalie Fawning of a decision of the City of Crescent City to grant a permit with conditions to Randy Baugh for construction of the Costa Norte Residential Professional Office Development Project along the Crescent City waterfront at 200 A Street near the famous Battery Point Lighthouse. The development includes a 98,755-square-foot, three-story, 35-foot-high structure containing 44 dwellings in a mix of condominiums, timeshare, and vacation rentals, as well as off-street parking and a below-grade subterranean garage as well. The appeals together raise a total of 9 contentions. They include such contentions that the project's inconsistent with LCP provisions regarding the protection of public access, that the use is not consistent with the medical-related land use designation, the residential density limitations and minimum lot area dwelling standards, that it's not consistent with geologic hazard protection provisions, sensitive habitat, ensuring water quality and impacts to visual resources. There are also contentions that the project as approved did not conform to CEQA review requirements and the project doesn't provide for emergency vehicular access to the beach. Staff is recommending that the commission find that all of these contentions except the CEQA and emergency access contention raise a substantial issue. And so staff further recommends that the commission continue the de novo portion of the hearing to allow the applicants time to submit information that's detailed in the staff report relative to public access, environmentally sensitive habitat, visual resources, as noted in the report. So with that, we'll ask if the commission desires to take testimony on this item, and if they do, I can present a more complete staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. Is there any ex parte starting on my left? No ex parties. Do three or more commissioners object to finding substantial issue? Hearing none, the commission has found substantial issue.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and then we will bring the matter back at a subsequent
hearing. Subsequent, right. Thank you, sir.
That brings us to item 10A, which is the de novo review by the commission of an appeal of a decision of Humboldt County to grant a modification to a previously approved coastal permit to Philip Cable.
We have no speaker slips on this, just for your knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The development that's on appeal involves construction of approximately 1,700-square-foot single-family home and construction of a driveway on a parcel at the southern end of Manila, adjacent to large open space areas consisting of dunes and wetland habitat. There is a staff addendum that I want to call your attention to that includes correspondence from a neighbor, Carl Burks, and also a letter from the applicant, which makes some changes in the alignment of the proposed offer to dedicate the public access easement, as well as changes to our recommended conditions and findings. The issues raised by the project primarily concern the best way to protect the environmentally sensitive habitat adjoining and on the site, as well as providing for public access. The site, the area to the west is, as I noted, is part of an extensive dune system, and the dune habitat comes right to the western boundary of the parcel. On the south side, there are wetlands that actually extend on to the parcel. These are one-parameter wetlands adjoined by three-parameter palustrine wetlands, and those also are close to extensive salt marsh area. The Planning Commission, when they approved the project, originally was for a lot split of this lot and the adjacent parcel. They relied on some outdated wetland information suggesting that a 100-foot buffer could be provided. The project was approved. It was not appealed. When the applicant came forward to apply for the current project and did a more site-specific wetland and habitat evaluation, it was found that the wetlands are actually closer to the site and are closer to the development site. And that was one of the issues on appeal. Since the commission found substantial issue in 2006, the applicant has revised the project somewhat, has moved the building envelope to the northwest portion of the site, has also provided additional information assessing the adequacy of the habitat buffers. Staff has reviewed the revised configuration and the need for buffers, and agrees with the habitat assessment that with planting of vegetation, a buffer that's less than 100 feet could be appropriate in this instance. However, we feel that some adjustments are needed, and the permit conditions reflect a revised building envelope. The habitat assessment from the applicant's consultant did not take into account the dune habitat. And so the building envelope that's proposed would provide for a 50-foot buffer from both the dune habitat and the wetlands. It would incorporate the suggestions for planting. We'd also have conditions that would require an open space deed restriction be recorded over the open space, that a drainage plan be incorporated to convey runoff from the driveway to permeable areas and away from the wetlands. And also that a buffer fence be provided to keep the pets and residential uses from encroaching towards the habitat. With those conditions, we feel that the project is consistent with the habitat buffer protection policies of the LCP. I do want to note, as I say, there is an addendum and there are some changes. The letter from the neighbor, Mr. Burks, raised several concerns. The changes that we've incorporated do such things as require that the buffer fencing completely enclose the perimeter of the building envelope rather than just run to the property line. We make it explicit that the utilities cannot go through the habitat areas but must go through the non-habitat areas. And then he also pointed out that the proposed access dedication, and the applicant had proposed an offer to dedicate, and the conditions require that the applicant follow through that with that and provide an offer document that be reviewed by staff and recorded. But the neighbor noted that the alignment went through an area of native vegetation, and since part of our requirements involve planting more vegetation, it was counterproductive to locate that through part of it. So the changes proposed by the applicant, who is agreeable to that, actually moves the buffer 30 feet further to the west to go around it. The only concern we didn't address from the neighbor's letter was with regard to wetlands. There's a assertion that the wetland delineation doesn't accurately portray all the wetlands. The staff looked at that. The letter came in on Tuesday. We did note that the same concern was raised at the county level, and the consultant for the applicant at that time did come out, did dig more soil pits and evaluated the site and determined that there were no hydric soils, there wasn't hydrology present, and although there were some hydrophytic plants, the preponderance was not, and that therefore it was not a wetland. Staff has not been able to independently verify that. To do that would require staking the delineation line and getting Dr. Dixon to conduct more investigation. However, we see that there is no substantial evidence that there is actually a problem with the wetland delineation, and we also believe that even if there were some changes in that, it would not make a difference to the project. The area that's at question is already covered by the open space easement, and the closest part of the development is the driveway, and it's as far away from the wetlands as they can possibly be located. So with that, I would just conclude by saying that the staff believes the project, as conditioned and as modified by the addendum, is consistent with the LCP and the public access policies of the Coastal Act, and recommends your approval of the staff recommendation as modified.
Thank you, Mr. Merrill. With that, I'll go and ask for ex parte, starting on my left. Are there any ex parties? Okay. No ex parties. And there's no speaker slips. And so with that, I'll go to what's the pleasure of my colleagues. Commissioner Vice Chair Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission approve Coastal Development Permit Amendment Number A-1-HUM-05-041, subject to the conditions in the staff report, and recommend a yes vote.
Second. It's been moved by Vice Chair Neely and seconded by Commissioner Riley. Both the maker and seconder are asking for a yes vote, and passage of this motion will result in the approval of the permit amendment as conditioned and the adoption of the resolutions and findings as contained in the staff report. Vice Chair Neely, would you like to speak to your motion?
Just to say that this was an absolute mess, and I want to commend staff for cleaning it up and for conditioning it appropriately and moving it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Neely. Commissioner Riley?
No comments, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, is there any objection to a unanimous yes roll call vote on this item? Hearing none, the commission unanimously approves the Coastal Development Permit Amendment for the proposed amended development and adopts the findings that are set forth in the staff report. Okay, and with that, we'll go to public input. And we have a request, Mr. Massara.
While he's coming up, Mr. Chair, could I ask staff a question?
Sure.
This is a question for Director Douglas. You spoke to us this morning about a project to maybe look at the analysis of the use of animals and grazing as a report. And I'm wondering if we could use those reports to inject into these vacant spaces where, for example, when projects get canceled or postponed, all of a sudden we have a half a day when we ought to be doing the people's work, and we're not able to do things because of cancellations and postponements. Is it possible staff could have a menu of project plugins that they could, so we could dispose of some of this material?
Commissioner Secord, I wish that were possible. Unfortunately, these workshops or reports require the input of outside people. So, for example, the workshop we're talking about for the goats, that's going to involve people from Department of Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they need to plan beforehand. Virtually every workshop we do requires advanced planning and logistics being put together. So we can't do it on the fly, so to speak, if we really want outside participation. And that's why we're doing it, because we want that kind of participation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Douglas. Mr. Massara, you know the drill. 3 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Commissioners, Mark Massara, Sierra Club Coastal Program. Can we get our picture?
Stop it. technical difficulties. Director Douglas, while we're waiting for that, do you have anything to add here before we don't see you until Santa Barbara?
That's
we'll miss you.
That's very kind of you, Mr. Chairman, but no. We will be working with the commissioners relative to the meeting schedule, and as I indicated, or we indicated yesterday, whether or not we will need to cancel the June meeting depends on what happens with the governor's executive order. As we indicated, we've asked for exemption from the additional 1% or 1.5% cut for this year. If that's not forthcoming, it's clear to me we're going to have to cancel the June meeting. And we should know that relatively soon. Commissioner Riley needs to know this if we're going to move to Santa Rosa for that meeting, the advance work that's required. So I just want to let you know we'll get the word to you as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think anyone who's listening or watching out there, it's really critical for projects and applicants, et cetera. It's in their best interest, et cetera, that we have enough planning people, et cetera, to get to their applications as quickly as possible. So I'm just putting in a little plug here, a little commercial during the break here for,
that's, you know. That's the case we're making, too. So
yeah.
Other than that, we'll see you in Santa Barbara next month. And again, I want to thank Commissioner Secord for helping us make those supervisor chambers available for us, and we will try to train our staff at least to behave themselves and pick up after themselves. We'll leave the commissioners to you.
Okay, Commissioner Secord.
On either Wednesday or Thursday during that Santa Barbara meeting, Mary and I will feed you all.
That'll be great. Yeah, thank you. That's very wonderful.
Not both. Not both days.
Are you ready, Mr. Massara?
We're ready for words, no pictures.
Well, you can give us your powerful words then.
I wanted to talk to you for a moment about Hobo Liso, City of Laguna Beach, the Athens and Development Company there, owner of Treasure Island and the Hobo Liso Ridge, which you know so well from all of our past presentation, and update you on the games that people are playing in Laguna. As you know, Dr. Dixon has declared the entire illegally graded Hobo Liso Ridge to be ESHA, and that was done last April 2007. Due to the numerous rare and endangered, even famous plants and animals that exist there. And despite your numerous requests following our numerous public input to you, that staff get going on the enforcement action to get this area restored, your staff has refused to pursue enforcement and restoration pending the developer's long-running and now long-delayed meritless vested rights claim. The developer, Athens Group, is holding this vested rights claim in abeyance while they pursue a new development plan with the City of Laguna Beach to put mansions on top of this ESHA. And they're telling Dr. Dixon that they won't remove all the illegal sandbags, thousands of them, unless he'll repudiate his ESHA determination. Meanwhile, the map that I wanted to show you is what they've submitted to the City of Laguna Beach, which shows not just mansions on top of this ESHA at Hobo Liso Ridge, but what they're calling a firewall. Now, this is, I guess, the latest maneuver related to the fire clearance and fire danger threats. What Athens is proposing to do is build a giant 6-foot-high wall all around Hobo Liso Ridge and these mansions that they intend to construct, apparently on top of ESHA. And the absurdity of what they're proposing is revealed in this map that's in front of the city while they pursue a vested rights claim that they're not really pursuing in front of this commission, only to hold in abeyance the enforcement action that you need to proceed with in order to have this area restored before Athens comes marching in That is for another occasion. Before Athens comes marching in with a city of Laguna Beach, with a city of Laguna Beach approval for mansions on top of this Esha that they in the city are in complicit on degrading with sandbags and firewalls and illegal grading and chopping of this rare crown beard and other Esha plants that exist there. And so we just want to ask once again, please give explicit counsel to your staff, direction that they proceed with this enforcement action, or else you're going to get caught in a squeeze play. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Massara. Director Douglas, what do you have to say to that?
The same that we've said every other time that Mr. Massara has come forward on this. We are proceeding with the enforcement action. The commission's action for a restoration is still valid. Your enforcement action has not been changed, not to my knowledge. And so I'm assuming that the staff is proceeding to make sure that directive from you is implemented. And I can't tell you more than that.
Okay.
I think what we need to do is I'll ask Sherilyn to give you an update at the April meeting part of her report.
That would be good to get an update because it raises some substantial issues here. So, and he's continued to raise the same issue.
Well, we're very aware of that. The firewall, that's a new issue, but relative to restoration and the order from this commission, we got the direction that you consider it a priority, and we need to enforce that, and that's what I assume we're doing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. Sorry, Commissioner Wan.
Well, the problem is, and I understand our staffing problem, okay, but what Mr. Massara is saying does concern me with regards to the speed. I don't want us in a situation like we had with Shea, where we're trying to resolve the enforcement issue at the same time as we're dealing with the development issue. And so, to some degree, there really is an urgency here to at least get this resolved by itself and not in the context of a hearing on a project. And that does concern me. If this is going on, and if, in fact, that project is going to be coming forward before our enforcement action, it's going to create a problem for us.
And, Mr. Chair, just briefly,
yes.
A number of commissioners, I think, received a CD on some of the deliberations of the Laguna City Council recently. I wonder if staff received that as well.
We did, but I have not seen it. I assume somebody else.
Just checking, making sure that you guys had it. And if you get a chance to take a look at it, you might want to do that.
Well, since you raised it, Commissioner Riley, I watched the entire thing and was wondering what was it we were supposed to see on it that struck you as inappropriate. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it. Since you've seen it, why don't you tell us?
I thought there were a couple comments about the League of Cities, and there were a couple comments about the Coastal Commission, but I've seen them, at least in Half Moon Bay City Council, much worse. And I think it was city officials kind of venting about the LCP modification process. And to be honest, someone raised, well, was our city attorney even at the commission hearing when these issues came up? And the answer was no. So I guess I watched it and I was trying to figure out which part I was supposed to be paying attention to, other than maybe the commission should remind cities that their representatives should not only be talking to staff, but if they have issues with staff, they should be talking to commissioners as well before the hearing, and that their counsel should be at the hearing when their LCP is discussed. I mean, I understood a lot of frustration since I'm not an elected official like some other time we should hear from electeds on the commission about. Clearly, there's a huge level of frustration with the commission staff on LCP modifications, but I think it's more of a process and communication issue on the first level. That's it.
Thank you, Commissioner Blank. And Commissioner Clark?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a call from Penny Aaliyah from the Sierra Club about this matter and indicating that we were going to, there was a considerable amount of concern over Laguna Beach City Council meeting, and the reason we got the I haven't looked at it yet either, but I am concerned, as some of the other commissioners are, with respect to the timing of when this occurs in terms of the remediation. And in terms of Commissioner Blank's comments, part of the reason, having been just previously on the board of directors of the League of California Cities, part of the reason the League sponsored organizing a local coastal cities group was to try and bridge the communication gap between the Coastal Commission and some of the cities. There have been some rocky road aspects to that, but that's still the intent, and we need to use that forum. I continue to serve as one of the co-chairs of that City League Cities group, so I just mentioned that.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Wan? Well, one of the problems, Commissioner Blank, with that is that, in particular, the from what I understand, and I haven't listened to the whole thing, but I will, and then I'll give you my opinion separately, is that there's a considerable comments and negative comments towards staff. And I got to continue to repeat that we have very professional staff, and just because you don't agree with them doesn't give you the right to attack them.
Commissioner Wan, I again don't want to defend what was said on that city council, but it was less an attack on the staff than it was on the process. And as I said, at least I believe on a generic level, they're much like, as most of you know, I made a pretty clear effort in making the LCP appeals process clear for homeowners, and the staff responded, I think, spectacularly well, at least on posting for the first time a flowchart on its website about how the process works. It's really clear from even these city council deliberations that city council, at least in Laguna Beach, was not clear about what the process is, and believing that negotiation with the staff and its process was the only way they could communicate to the commission. I just want to point out that
they must not have anybody that's familiar with commission process on their council.
I'm talking about their staff. Not I'm just observing what the video looked like, not defending the city council. And I'm stepping in an area of electeds, but I just want to point out that this is feels identical to the same thing that homeowners went through for understanding LCP appeals. That there really isn't doesn't seem to be a clear process that's understood by all.
Okay, thank you, and we'll see everybody in Santa Barbara. Thank you.